If you want to turn to Matthew chapter 8, we looked at the first 17 verses the last time that we were together. We're ready to start in verse number 18. And we'll look at a few more verses here tonight. After Jesus' Sermon on the Mount and after His healings, there are quite a few people around Him, and He's had quite an eventful time of it, with all the teaching He's been doing, with the healing, and with the people coming up to Him, and just... You ever get that feeling that you've been just in a crowd too long and you just want to be alone for a little while? You just want some peace and quiet, maybe. I know you grandparents never feel that way about the grandchildren. You always want them to stay longer and longer. But sometimes you do get that feeling that you've just been around too many people for too much time and you just want to get away from it for a little while. And Jesus seems to have been feeling that a little bit at this point. In verse 18, says that when He saw the great multitudes about Him, He gave commandment to depart to the other side. Now, the other side there being, of course, of the Sea of Galilee. He wanted to get away to the other side for a little while. Get away from all of these crowds of people that had been following Him and all of the sick that He had been healing. And we think about, well, He's God. I mean, He's the Son of God. His power is limitless, isn't it? Well, in a sense, that's true. If you remember back to the temptations of Satan in the wilderness, Satan tempted Him with food. Make some bread. You've been fasting. You haven't been eating. Aren't you hungry? And the Bible does record that Jesus was hungry. Well, you see, there are limits to the human body and what it can do and what it can take. Despite the fact that Jesus was deity, that He was God in the flesh, He was in the flesh. And that flesh had its limits. Some of us maybe have at points in our lives been pushed near the limits of some of that. Maybe we've been without sleep or without food or without something. Or we've been cold, we've been hot. Maybe we've felt a little bit of that. Well, Jesus had to deal with His physical body. It limited Him. He had to understand the compromise that He had to make with being God, that when He had that human body, it kept Him from doing some of the things that God normally would be able to do. That's one of the sacrifices that He made for us. In addition to that, of course, Jesus needed to teach other people. He couldn't just teach this one crowd. His teachings were for everyone, and He needed to spread that word. His ministry, His reason for coming to earth, was not just to heal all the sick people. If He healed every sick person there had been in the world at that time, and then left, what would He have really accomplished? That wasn't His goal. His goal was not to bring physical health to the world. He wasn't a doctor in that sense of the word. Instead, He was bringing spiritual health, and that needed to be spread all over. But He just needed some time to rest and recuperate from a physical standpoint. And we'll see that borne out a little later on tonight. He subjected Himself to these limits when He put on the flesh, when He became a man. He no longer was the unlimited God for that period of time. That He was God still, but He wasn't unlimited. He emptied Himself. He put Himself in that certain circumstances under which He had to live. He had to be a baby. He had to learn to talk and how to crawl and how to walk. He didn't just automatically get to miraculously be able to do those things. When he was a little fellow learning to walk, he stumbled and fell down just like every other little baby that ever learned how to walk when they got up to that age. He would have done that. And so he had to deal with the human aspect of it. Well, as he's telling his disciples that they're going to leave and get away from it all, a man comes up to him, a scribe, and says, "I'll follow you anywhere you go." That's a big boast, isn't it? "I'll go wherever you go, I'm going to follow you." Well, this guy's pretty big on the talk. Wonder why we don't read much more about what a devoted disciple he is in the rest of the Gospels. We never hear any more about this guy. He's all talk. As they say over in Texas, big hat, no cattle. He had the look, and he could say it, but he had nothing to back it up. But Jesus explains to him, "It's not going to be easy if you want to follow me." Jesus never deluded people. He never tried to trick people. He never tried to tell them that, "Hey, come follow me and I'll make everything perfect for you. You won't have any problems." He never told people that. He was honest with them. He told them, and he had already... Kind of wonder if these folks listened to the Sermon on the Mount. He talked about the persecution that would follow and the problems and the tribulations and the trials that they'd face. And that it was a hard path. It was straight and narrow. It was difficult to follow. But still, this fellow had come saying, "I'll follow you anyway." How many people do you know who have said, "I'm going to follow Jesus"? And we sing that song, "I have decided to follow Jesus." How many people, at one point or another, decided to follow Jesus, but then, for one reason or another, didn't follow through, or turned back from following Him? One of the things that Luke talks about, when he says, "Whoever puts his hand to the plow and looks back is not fit for the kingdom." It's in the same type of setting. In fact, in a very similar passage to this one in Luke's account, that he says those very things. He said, "Hey, you know, if you make your decision, if you're going to come with me, come with me. But it's not going to be easy." Jesus tells him, "You know, the birds, they've got their nests. The foxes have their holes. You know, most people have homes, don't they? But not Jesus. Jesus was homeless." He said, "The Son of Man," that's what he called himself here. In fact, he called himself that more than 40 times in the Gospels. He says, "The Son of Man doesn't have anywhere to lay his head down. I don't have a bed. I don't have a pillow. I don't have a home to go home to. So if you follow me, you won't know where you're going. I just go wherever I can find a place to go. Wherever somebody will take me in." And certainly Jesus did depend on the kindness of people like Mary and Martha and Lazarus. He depended, as we saw in the last lesson last week, he depended on the kindness of people like Peter, who took him into his home, and Peter's mother-in-law, who served him and fed him. You see, Jesus left the throne room of heaven, the glory of heaven, to come down here to nothing. To come be born in a manger. To come be a poor carpenter's son. And if you wonder how we know that he was a poor carpenter's son, just look back to when they came to the temple to offer the sacrifice when Jesus was a baby. The general sacrifice was a lamb. But the sacrifice for someone who was too poor to bring a lamb was two turtle doves. And that's the offering his parents brought for him, Joseph and Mary. That's what they brought for Jesus, the two turtle doves. They weren't wealthy individuals. Jesus was born and lived in a poor home, poor household. And then now, he's grown up and he's become a man, and if living in a poor household wasn't enough, now he's homeless. I wonder, sometimes, if Jesus came back now, as he lived then, what would we think of him? Would we discount him? Would we just ignore him entirely because, well, he's just a homeless man? I wonder. I wonder how we would view him. It's hard to know. He didn't come now, but he came then. But we need to recognize the condition in which he came and the way that he came. We talked about him calling himself the Son of Man. He also is called the Son of David, the Son of Abraham, the Son of God, the Son of Adam, the Son of Joseph, and the Son of Mary. Now, of course, we know that he wasn't actually the son of Joseph, but that's who people thought was his father. But then in verse 21, after he said this, he said, you know, you'll follow me, it's not going to be easy. I don't even have a place to go. Then in verse 21, another follower, he still wants to follow, but he wants to do it on his own terms. Is that the way we are? Well, yeah, Lord, I'll follow you, but then we give him our conditions. No. Unconditional surrender. That's the only way we can follow Jesus. We don't get to decide. We don't get to bargain with him or have some sort of, we'll go back and forth and he comes with his plan and we come back with our counter offer and all. No, no, no. It's either his way or the highway. But this man wants to follow Jesus, but he wants to follow on his own terms. He wants, he says, to simply put, wait to follow Jesus until after he buries his father. Jesus' response to that is to let the dead bury the dead. You follow me. And when we read that, especially in the English and in our culture and our society, we think, wow, Jesus is cruel. He doesn't even want this man to go to his father's funeral. But we've got to understand a little more about the culture and about the language, the Greek language that this was originally written in, to understand a little better what's really going on here. This man's father wasn't dead. It wasn't like the funeral was tomorrow. When he said, let me bury my father, what he really was saying was, I'll follow you, but let me wait until after my parents pass on, and then I'll follow you. He was putting it off to some indefinite time in the future. He wouldn't say, you know, my dad's funeral is tomorrow, and then I'll come after you. No, he would say, well, you know, hey, when my dad dies, then I'll come follow you. And Jesus puts him in his place. He tells him, look, if you wait until then what's going to happen? Well, after that happens, there will be some other event. There'll be something else to wait for. You see, that's the way procrastination works, isn't it? I know, none of you have ever procrastinated, maybe. I inherited that from my father, I think. He intended to pass it on to someone else, but I got it. But, you know, if you ever procrastinate, you ever put something off, particularly something that maybe you don't really want to do. And see, this scribe may have known that he should follow Jesus, but he didn't really. I mean, after hearing that statement, but this second follower, he may not have really wanted to follow Jesus after hearing that, but he didn't want to not seem like he was wanting to follow. So he had to say something. And so he just puts it off to sometime in the future. I hear it all the time. Well, one of these days, I'm going to get in church. Or even if people who've left the church, I'm going to come back. I'm coming back for years. I'm coming back. I guess they're still coming back because they haven't got back yet, some of them. Fact of the matter is, when we start procrastinating, we start making excuses, the devil will provide them. He will continue to give us one more excuse and one more reason to procrastinate and put it off till tomorrow. You see, the devil is of the opinion, do not do today what you can put off till tomorrow. And as one once said, don't do tomorrow what you can put off till the day after that. I'll put it off. We'll get around to it. Do it someday. Jesus made it clear that following Him is of the utmost, not only importance, but also urgency. Do it right now. He said, you follow me. You let the dead bury the dead. When your father dies, that'll be on down the road. You follow me now. Don't wait for some future event. Think about how many people waiting for some future event to follow Jesus died before that event occurred. And they never followed Jesus because they were waiting for some event on down the road to happen. Well, Jesus wasn't telling us don't go to funerals. He wasn't telling us that we shouldn't love people or care about people. What He was pointing out was, He's got to come first. He's first. Always first. That's the kind of dedication that He requires from us if we're going to be pleasing to Him. And then in verse 23, He gets into the ship, ready to go to the other side finally after these interruptions that kept Him from leaving. But now He gets into the boat and they're ready to go and they're getting out there and they go out into the water. Crossing the Sea of Galilee and a few of His disciples there with Him. Most likely, although at this point His apostles have not yet even been named, but most likely these disciples that are in the ship with Him are the ones who ultimately will become His apostles as we know them. At least some of those individuals were in this situation most likely. And so here they are, and they're out on the water, and a storm comes up. And it's a big storm. Storms so much so that the waves are not just crashing around the ship, but they're crashing over the ship. You ever been in a boat on a storm? I've never been there. I wouldn't want to be. You know, it's one thing to be in your car in a storm. It's one thing to be at home when there's a storm. But to be out there on the water, and when the water starts coming over into the boat, that's not good. So the disciples get just a little concerned about this situation, don't you think? None of us would have, I'm sure. I mean, but Jesus is in the boat, isn't He? We're not scared. Yeah, we're real brave sitting in here, aren't we? In the lights when there's no storm and we're on dry land and not in the boat, we can be real brave then. But no, the storm came. Now, we talked earlier about the fact that Jesus needed rest and recuperation. You want to know how tired Jesus is? He is asleep in this boat. He's asleep. The water's splashing over the side, probably getting him soaking wet, and he's sleeping right through it. It's not even waking him up. You know, that's the way you wake somebody up, isn't it? You splash some water in their face, wakes them up. But Jesus is laying here on this boat, and the waves are crashing in, and he's still sleeping just as calmly and peacefully. I bet he was tired. But even if you're not afraid, a storm will wake you up, won't it? Sure. Unless you're exhausted, and then you sleep right through it. But Jesus is sleeping. And the disciples they're more than a little scared now. You know, I can see, they've been out on, we've been out here fishing on this lake before. We've been in storm. But this storm, they thought, oh, there's some clouds, no big deal. We'll get across the lake before it hits, right? And then it hit. And at first, you know, that's just, wow, it's just a little bit of wind. The waves are kind of choppy. We'll be all right. We've been in worse storms than this, and then it gets worse, and it gets worse, and then the waves start crashing, and you can see them with the, you know, they're trying to get the water back out of the boat, and more's coming in, and they're scooping it out and trying to throw it out of the boat. And finally, they're afraid they're going to die out here. I mean, you know, I can swim, but I can't swim from the middle of the sea over to the land, and with all these waves, there's no way I'd get sucked under, and they're really starting to get afraid. They think they're going to die. Verse 25, they said, Lord, save us. We perish. They woke him up. Had to wake him up. Save us, Lord. We're fixing to drown. What you doing sleeping over here? Wake up and do something. At least get some of the water out of the boat. Get up. Help us out here. Do something. Now, they'd seen some of his miracles already. So they knew that, you know, maybe he can do something, you know. Maybe he can put a force field around the boat so the water can't get in. Something. Verse 26. He rebukes them for their lack of faith. O ye of little faith. Now it's interesting that he points out here one of the causes, one of the things that brings about a lack of faith. It's fear. Now in this case, I mean, this is a very real fear. I mean, there was an actual danger here, wasn't it? I mean, you're in a boat, in the water, it could sink. And it's a storm, so water's coming in, and it was a legitimate fear. This wasn't an irrational fear. It was a reasonable fear. But they should have known Jesus was there. I love the song, Master, the Tempest is Raging, that portrays this event. So, and I love especially when a congregation that when you sing that with the not only the tempo changes but also the volume increasing and the quiet and then the loud, and it really helps you get the feel of what was going on in these few verses here. But Jesus points out fear is a problem. There are four times in the book of Matthew where he upbraids someone, rebukes them for having little faith, not enough faith. This is one of them. The other one we've already seen back in chapter 6 and verse 30. In that case, he says that the cause for the lack of faith there was worry. Now see, there's a difference between the fear that's mentioned here and worry. Fear is, like we said, this is a real life-threatening situation. If Jesus hadn't been there, they might have drowned. They were in a truly dangerous situation if Jesus hadn't been there for them. But when he talked back in chapter 6 about worry, he's talking about something where it's not even something you should be afraid of. It's not a real, legitimate danger. That's worry. And we all get, if we're not careful, wrapped up in some worries. Somebody's 2 minutes late getting home, and we start imagining all the things that could have happened. Now, we have no real reason to think that those things happened, but we just, our mind starts running to all the horrible things that could have happened. Just because somewhere we saw in a movie one time that happened to somebody, you know. And so we think, that's what happened to them. Well, worry and fear are two of those biggies that cause us to have a lack of faith. Another one in chapter 14 and verse 31 is mentioned, and that's doubt. Now, doubt's kind of a tricky one. Because the way doubt works is Doubt gets you when it shouldn't be able to. Doubt gets you after you've already had success in that area, after things are going well, and then doubt sneaks in and you start to question. You see, the situation there, and we'll look at it certainly in more detail when we get to chapter 14, the situation there is Peter has gotten out of the boat and he's walking on the water to Jesus. Now, that seems like a pretty good situation. He's already had the faith to get out of the boat. He's already taken some steps, so he's being successful. But then the doubt overtakes him, because I can just imagine if I was, the thing's going to, wait a minute, people aren't supposed to be able to stand up on top of water. That shouldn't, that's, there's some, this isn't, this shouldn't be happening, that can't happen. Now, I know I took 3 or 4 steps, but that must, there's something, no, this isn't right. And then he starts looking around at the wind and the waves too, and he starts to doubt whether I'm not really doing this. I can't be doing this. There's no way I could be walking on water. People can't walk on water. And he starts to sink. His doubt conquered his faith. Now see, doubt and faith are polar opposites, and one is going to win out. Either doubt is going to conquer your faith, or faith is going to conquer your doubt and drive it out. One of those two. But Peter is corrected there because of his lack of faith, which is odd because at the beginning he had so much faith. But then it failed on him. It was conquered by doubt. And then chapter 16 and verse 8, the last place that Matthew talks about this, the situation that produces a shortage of faith in this situation that's described in Matthew 16 and verse 8 is human reasoning. Human minds. Dangerous things when they're let loose. To think their own thoughts. And they get into trouble. They start thinking all sorts of things they shouldn't. Jesus says to them there, "Why reason ye among yourselves, O ye of little faith?" And in that situation, they were all wrapped up in how they didn't have any bread. Now at that point, Jesus had already taken just a few loaves and fish on 2 different occasions. One occasion he fed 5,000 people with enough that should have been enough to feed 1 or 2. And on the other occasion with just a little bit to feed 1 or 2, he had fed 4,000. And so here they are and they don't have any bread and they're all figuring, oh no, we're in trouble because we don't have any bread. And Jesus said, why are you thinking? You're thinking too much. Don't you remember how I fed the 5,000? And don't you remember I fed the 4,000? How many baskets of extra you took up and all? What are you thinking? Well, see, these are the folks, and we fall into that sometimes of somebody who's too smart for their own good. They've outthought God. They figured out how what God said can't be right. It must be different than that. Don, in fact, just before we were getting ready to leave to come tonight, Don was looking at an encyclopedia about the Bible type book that was talking about how the book of Daniel, now remember, the book of Daniel details Daniel and Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego during the reigns of Nebuchadnezzar and Darius before the children of Israel come back to the land again, while they're in captivity. This is some, 500 years before Jesus is the time frame we're talking about here. But these brilliant scholars have figured out that the book of Daniel was written about 170 B.C. It was only really written about 170 or 180 years before Jesus came. Really? They outsmart themselves. They got it all figured out. Daniel didn't live 170 years before Jesus came. Daniel lived when he lived, King Nebuchadnezzar, King Darius. But they can't accept that. You know that according to those brilliant scholars, all of these Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, were written some 200 years after Jesus. See, they're too smart for their own good. Why? Matthew was dead before 200 years after Jesus. John was dead before 200 years after. There's no way they wrote those 200 years. Oh, but they didn't really write them, you see. It was somebody else that wrote them and just pretended to be. You see how this human reasoning gets people into all sorts of false doctrines, gets them to doubt the Scriptures, it destroys people's faith. That's exactly what it does. Because they outsmart themselves. Those are the kind of people that Romans 1 talks about. When they knew God, they did not glorify Him as God. But they worshipped and served the creature rather than the Creator. You see, these people worship themselves. They're humanists. They think humans are God instead of God being God. We've got to watch out for those things. Those things certainly can happen. But you know what else is interesting in this little section is that in spite of their lack of faith, Jesus saved them anyway in this situation. Now that doesn't mean that He'll say, oh well, you don't even have to have faith. Jesus will save you anyway. No, that's not the point. At this point, Jesus was still trying to establish their faith. He wanted to show them who He really was, and so He calmed the storm. Remember that. He didn't just protect them from the storm. He actually stilled the waters, calmed the wind. In fact, Matthew records there was a great calm. Now, can you imagine? I mean, I've seen some storms come up pretty quickly. They come up pretty fast. But usually they... Even at that, you know, you see it coming and it builds. Even if it's kind of quickly, it builds and builds. And then when it tapers off at the end, it just kind of tapers off. But Jesus just said, peace be still. He rebuked the wind and the sea. And it didn't say, well, then the storm started to go away. It said there was a great calm. Immediately. Just like the healings that we looked at last week. Jesus' power here over the world of nature. It's incredible to think about, isn't it? I mean, I don't know, you try it when you go home. Get you a sink full of water. And, you know, get it all stirred up where it's sloshing back and forth. And, you know, maybe you might need a towel to get your floor all wet. But, you know, slosh that stuff up really good. And then try to calm it down. Just try to settle it down. Now it'll eventually, you know, it'll settle down on its own, but you can't really speed that process much. You can't calm that. That's just a sink full of water. What's He doing calming a sea? And the wind? Why don't you just try sometime to stop the wind? Just give it a shot. See how you do. This man, and the disciples that are with Him, they're amazed, they're shocked. They're just in awe of Him. Who is this man that we've got in the boat with us? Now that's odd because just a little while ago, they're getting Him up saying, Lord, save us! And then when He saves them, they're all surprised. Who is this guy that saved? You're the one that woke Him up and asked Him to save you, and now you're surprised He did it. But I don't know what they really expected Him to do to save them, but this apparently was beyond their expectations. Maybe they just thought He would help by bailing the water out of the boat. Maybe they thought He could do something, you know, to kind of keep the water out somehow or something. I don't know what they thought. But they were shocked by this. This was not what they expected. And they're amazed by this man. This man... Who is that? He can calm the wind and the waves. Who is this guy? He's like nobody else we've ever seen. Nobody else we've ever even heard of. He's something special. Now they haven't yet figured out that He's the Son of God. Not yet. They hadn't really fully comprehended that yet. But they're starting to see that He is different from anybody else that's ever been around. You see, he's still building their faith. He's still giving them these miracles, showing them his power so that they will believe in him. And he's going to continue growing it. He's going to continue building their faith throughout his life on this earth and throughout his ministry. When we look next week in the following verses, we're going to see there were some on earth at the time who knew exactly who he was. And we're going to look at some of those individuals next time. What about you and your faith? Do you find yourself suffering from too little faith? And what causes it in your life? Is it your doubt? Is it your fear? Is it your worry? Is it your own reasoning things out? You know, God doesn't live according to man's reasoning. He doesn't abide by that. He doesn't live by our rules. We can't impose them on Him. He works in His own way, different from us. What about it? What about you? If you're falling short, you need to work in that area and you need to come to Jesus for help in that area. If you don't have the faith you should and you need the prayers of the church, or if there's any other problem in your life that you need the prayers of the church for, we ask that you respond as we stand and as we sing.